Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to AFP. My name is Devang Desai, and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Nick Andrade. On today's show, we chat a wild night in Montreal, plus more home woes for TFC. Club soccer is back in Europe somehow. A ton of games to get to, plus all of your questions on Ask AFP. Gentlemen, it's good to be back. I see the ship hasn't sunk. I listened to last week's show. It was great. Thank you for the content. I mean it.
So, how was your week?
So I didn't take a break from my day job, so I was still doing that, but I got to go see some tennis and I got to forget that the Premier League did start this weekend. So for a while it was good. And then even after I saw the lineup on Friday for Arsenal, I was for a good 30 minutes. I was really excited about the youth on display, but I've had better weekends, David, if that's what you're getting at.
No, that literally wasn't. I thought you were actually on vacation. And I was getting at, how was your vacation? I did not try and dunk on your Premier League team behind the back.
Felt
but,
that way.
You know, it felt sometimes it just works out in life. So I'm glad to hear that. We missed you, Devang. I think Nick and Dylan most especially missed you because
100%.
You give me the wheel and I'm going to take a hard left turn and go in the other direction. Yeah, Nick's like, so this can be quick, 2 minutes. Yeah, for sure. And then now I'm on an existential conversation about selling young players and MLS and the point of it all. And yeah, that's where we ended up.
I enjoyed the spicy EPL predictions. I mean, I was shocked at some of the picks. And I guess we can have Nick's pick. I did not. I was going to go, if I was to be on the show last week, revisionist history, I probably would have gone on a rant myself about how the Premier League is dead to me before the season even began. So maybe it was better that I didn't make my picks. But the Moyes pick, Dick, that was inspired. They look okay, though. I mean, one game in, they look bad briefly against Newcastle. Yeah. But will you apologize?
A little bit of a take, but not really, because we don't think about it this way. Mikel Antonio might be the best player in CONCACAF because sounds like he's working on a citizenship and he will declare. If not, he's probably the best center forward in CONCACAF.
David, I got to say, I think you're shifting from being that U.S. super fan to being a Jamaica super fan. I think that's what's happening. You're transitioning probably. And I love it.
That would be a very on-brand thing for me to do.
Speaking of on-brand things, David, you heard that you were part of the TSN montage package for the Revolution TFC game on Saturday night.
You texted me about this. So I found, not on purpose, but someone put out, I thought it was a TSN article about Tejan Buchanan's rise. And I clicked on it. And it turns out it's a video that says that I can't watch it because of my geography. Super offensive, TSN. Be better. And I assume that is that video. So now I got to find a VPN situation amazing. And whatever. Did I say things that were wrong?
So you didn't. You didn't at all. And I think it was a lot of praise. And I think you just said the timeline is uncertain for when Tejan can be great. But you said he could be great. And the best part of it all was that it was super draft like web stream footage. So I think they might have doubled down on it to make it look like found footage that it was like uncovered. And it's just a photo of a clip of David Goss talking about Tejan Buchanan, the super draft. And I'm like, haha, yes, because AFP has gotten into the bloodstream and DG is now a big voice in Canada. So I saw it as a claim to fame.
It's the only thing I've ever dreamed of. So I'll take that. I will say my footballing heart was raised in Canada.
Amazing. Well, I guess we can get to Liverpool a bit later, Nick, but I have to say you must be feeling good about things.
Yeah, this weekend was really good, especially with my soccer clubs. But I'm not gonna mention that because, again, you know, the troubles that you're going through, I don't want to kind of oversteam my happiness, but I wanted to say,
Since when did you develop tact?
Nick, right? Who his emotions aren't completely controlled by his sports teams, but then comes out with, yeah, I had a good weekend by coincidence. Liverpool won this weekend.
I wanted to say something cheeky in the group chat, but I'm just like, you know what? No, this is not worth it. You know,
twice.
Go through it. But I wanted to say, I started watching Ted Lasso, by the way. I don't know if you guys have gone into it, but this show is great. Other than it being unrealistic to how the Premier League works in general, I got to say a few episodes in, they beat Everton for the first time in 60 years. So it made me pretty happy.
Wow, that's no spoilers. Amazing. Spoilers, man. Jeez.
I have watched the entire first season.
Yeah.
I watched it previously. I have not begun the second season yet, which people are very excited about and just came out. So I will have to do that.
I got to watch that. Also, DeVang, one more thing, Canada is playing in their World Cup qualifiers coming up soon. And tickets go on sale on
Wednesday,
the 18th.
Yeah.
So I am formally inviting you to go watch a game on this podcast.
The Rose invite. I've been waiting for this day. We got a posse forming, Nick. So I'm in. We'll go with a group. We'll go with a band of people. Canada, Honduras, Thursday, September 2nd, BMO Field should be lit. Get your tickets on Wednesday.
That World Cup qualifying starts in like 2 weeks.
It's all wild. I know. It's all troubling.
This whole season is weird right now.
I would like to say I didn't have a meltdown on Friday morning when I realized the season was starting for the Premier League, but I did just because it's happening again. It's happening again. And it's a beautiful game. We love it. But also, my God, it's a lot of games, which we're going to talk about coming up very shortly. Before we do, a reminder, we are on patreon.com/footballpodcast. We are close to our first goal. Once we get there, more exclusive interviews will drop from the feed. Plus, if you join us there, get exclusive access to post-game reaction to special games, World Cup qualifying, like I just mentioned, plus Discord access, getting the show ad-free, plus getting it a bit early as well when the show drops. So head on over to patreon.com/footballpodcast and join today. When we come back, one of the wilder endings to an MLS game we have seen in some time in Montreal, plus TFC talk, plus a wild game in the Cascadia rivalry. A lot to get to in MLS and CPL land coming up next.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The third different shooter in a never-ending sequence here for the win. Cuadrado got a piece, not enough. Montreal takes the lead.
So the best part of all of that, welcome back to AFP, by the way, but the best part of all of that, David, is that the shot that went in, Wanyama hitting basically straight at the keeper and barely scoring to conclude one of the more bizarre endings that we have seen. A night to remember at Stats Saputo, a night that had big implications on the playoff race as well. But David, of that hilarity, two penalty saves eliminated because the goalie stepped off his line and then Wanyama scoring the winner. Of it all, what was your favorite part of the madness in Montreal?
Can I start with my least favorite part?
Please.
My least favorite part is that Alan Chapman has to go to the VAR monitor to watch this. The first time, at least. I think the second one, did he go as well? I can't remember now. Whatever it was.
I think so.
For things that are lines, is he on the line or is he off the line? If the VAR tells him, this is what I think it is, it should be the same as your assistant referee saying it. I don't need to watch him go watch it and make this a 2-minute thing to change the call. Like the ball was struck. He was off the line. The VAR tells him that we now retake the shot. So that's the one thing that I found frustrating about the whole experience. They were the right calls for both of them. And then, as you said, Wanyama steps up third and Cornell lets it through his hands after all he had done, which is frustrating for him. I think even with the stepping off the line, like, let's be real, eight goalies do it 80% of the time. They get called for it now, probably 50% of that. And it used to be like 10. So it's definitely gone up, but it's still not 100%. I think that there should also be a rule change where the same person has to shoot the whole time. Like, you're locked in now. You have made the decision. You're officially the taker in this. The goalkeeper is not changing and you're not changing. I think that would make it fun. But it was a deserved win for Montreal. It was a necessary win, as you said, in this playoff race. And this is a team where if they can sneak two extra points in moments like this, they can make the playoffs. If they drop points at home against a team like the Red Bulls, who are below the playoff line, and right now they're fairly far below that line, that's probably the death kiss for them. So this was, as you said, a big moment. And I felt like you could see the emotion in it. Like, I go back to when Ibrahim scores his header off the bench. Piet is on the field celebrating. Probably a captain and a national team player who's not getting a start here. So excited for that moment. And you could feel the crowd and you could feel like they're back home and all of that. And so these emotional moments for Montreal, I think, are continuing to push them along. And they've had enough, even if they've had down periods of every 2-3 weeks, something like that, where they're able to pick themselves back up.
Definitely didn't know that you were able to switch shooters, which I thought was shocking that they would allow that. It reminded me of like the World Juniors, which is a Canadian thing in hockey. I remember there's like a Canada-US game where Jonathan Toews took three penalty shots in a row, which I just assumed was a rule that they had in other sports. But that was a curveball. The equalizer, too, I wonder if it is safe to make this judgment now, but Mihailovic has probably been one of the better pickups you could have.
I had him on my all-star ballot. I think he's been that good for Montreal. And then you add in the fact that they got him inside this league. He's young. He's got potential to be sold if that's what they want to do. But I also think he's one of those guys who has been on the out. I think the experience of being at a club and then not having it go your way changes your mentality of leaving.
Right.
You understand how precious it is to have a coach that trusts you, have a club that wants to build around you. So yeah, he probably will if he has the potential to, because he'll want to try and push into the national team. And that probably is somewhat reliant on him going to Europe, considering the guys he's going to be going up against. But he's been the perfect addition, as has Mason Toy, as has Kamal Miller. And then a bunch of the guys they've brought in from overseas, like Torres and Maciel and Amdi. But those three to me are like, those are the dream MLS acquisitions of young players who are in the wrong spot, or in Kamal Miller's case, being used the wrong way. You bring them in for assets you're not going to use. Like, that allocation money is for bringing players into this league at high prices that Montreal's not going to use anyway. So you're basically getting it for nothing in the way you operate. And then you're able to put them in a position to be successful. It just continues to work for them. And with the lack of top end talent, they've now created a ton of depth. And so you see them with the ability to swap wingbacks, to swap central midfielders, to have four or five options up top that can all be good and dangerous.
That Wilf Nancy fit as well. Super casual, super cool. He's with it. Look out for Montreal. Definitely a contender for one of those last few spots in the East. A team that probably will not be contending for one of those last few spots. I might say it now. Count the date when this comes out. August 17th. I don't think TFC is making the playoffs, David. I think the result against New England, a 2-1 loss, in which I think you could argue again, TFC played pretty well, especially against the Revs team, who had a bunch of guys back. They had their Gold Cup stars there. They had most of their stars. I know Carlos Heel was not there, and Matt Polster had a pretty brutal injury as well during this game, which was not great. But overall, for the run of the play,
he's saying he's probably okay. So that was good. Interesting. Good to hear.
You know, it's not okay, Ralph Parisso, David, because the AR decided to let the play go in one of those instances where they definitely had the discretion not to. But I digress. I think I can say safely, though, that another loss, even though to a good New England team, might be it for a TFC team that now is dealing with some injuries. And I just don't know if this combination of players is necessarily it going forward. I wonder if you think I'm being too reactionary, but I feel like this is safe to say where we're at in the season.
The numbers agree with you, right? Like, they are 11 points out of the playoffs right now with no games in hand on Montreal, who's sitting in seventh. And then there are some teams in between with some games in hand who wouldn't pass Montreal, but could change the calculation a little bit. Those numbers say that it's too hard for TFC to put together the results they need and then jump all of those teams in between. In saying that, I think it was Columbus 2 years ago who was in a similar situation. And they made a run and they fell just short. We've seen DC do it a few times as well, of teams just, I guess you have nothing else to play for. You find your form late in the season. MLS is an up and down league, so some teams find their form at different times. It feels unlikely. And one of the parts with TFC that feels unlikely is normally you start a run like that with a solid defensive group. And it's the issue is goals. TFC is the opposite of that, except they're not scoring either. So I could see the attack come together. I could see if Soteldo starts finishing, who I'm not out on at all. And I think it's ridiculous.
I was going to ask you about the the discourse, David.
So on Sunday night, Portland Timbers play against Seattle Sounders and Sebastian Blanco comes back and we all celebrate it. Sebastian Blanco was considered a failure after a year in Major League Soccer. Right now he's an MVP favorite. Now he's an MVP candidate. Hani Mukhtar was considered a bust, what, big 3 time. Months ago?
Big time, yeah. 3 days ago. Yeah, 3 months ago, 3 months ago.
And Blanco, because I had to pull it up, 8 goals, 8 assists his first year. Not bad overall. 32 games, though, to do that in, including a preseason and probably getting to move to the country he's living in and not Soteldo's situation. I put Mukhtar in there. I think there's a couple young ones that we've seen recently. I give every foreign signing a year minimum to get acclimated to the league, to the travel, to the experience. And Soteldo comes in midseason. So I wouldn't say this in a year for him. Like it has to hit next season for him if he gets a preseason, but I don't watch him play and not think that it's not there, right? The burst is there. The touch is there. Yeah. The creativity is there. Like he destroys defenders. He just does a little too much. Or he's not understanding when the second guy's coming for help, how to be dangerous to make it work for his team. And so he's got a lot of block shots or block crosses for no reason. But you watch him in Pozuelo and you can understand how it would work. Achara has helped them be that center forward presence that I think it looks a little bit more comfortable for them. And you've got some pieces around it that aren't right, and I don't know that you have the flexibility to change it next year. But I think if Soteldo can get you a little bit of production to end this season, and you feel comfortable about Preso and Delgado as your central midfield, like if you can prove that to yourself, that's probably a quote unquote success for the rest of this year.
I think he'll figure it out. I'm with you in that regard. I don't know necessarily if he is a DP though. I think that that kind of conversation might be worth having as we get further along, but I wouldn't make a judgment just yet. But before the season, I was worried about the center backs. I was worried about the defense in general, but the center backs consistently, I think this season has confirmed what you were saying about being able to go on a run. I don't think they can. Whether it be Zavaleta or Omar and Chris, or Chris and Zavaleta, I just don't think they have the guys at the back right now to feel comfortable or secure with any sort of lead or chasing a lead. I just think, especially the penalty on Saturday. I mean, you have to ask questions about what are you doing? It's just so maddening. We've seen it so many times this year as well.
What happened to Luke Singh?
It's also interesting that I think he's probably not ready. Like, I guess the judgment is made he's not ready, but like, I'm not against seeing Justin Morrow give it a go with center back. Honestly, like, I think at this stage of the game, if Gibby experience to trump out any sort of height concerns or maybe unfamiliarity with the positions, because it's just not working right now.
Yeah.
And I think it affects the style of the team as well. Here's the time
where you need the management of the club to be able to have a conversation with Javi Perez, who, congrats on getting the interim job for the year. I think he's earned it. But like, the conversation has to be at some point. Yeah, we want to try and win and be successful, whatever, now, but like, what's going to help you more in the future? And is starting Omar Gonzalez going to help you more in the future, or is starting a player like a Luke Singh just to see what you have? And he might not be anywhere close, but we know what the other pieces are right now. And so in terms of quote unquote building for the future, that's where you need those moments. And I assume the club isn't making the same assessment as we are right now. Like, I assume they still think you have a shot halfway through the season. But in 6 or 7 games, you'll know where you stand.
And I think, and also in their calculus, their jobs might not exist if they don't make the playoffs. Right. So,
but Javi Perez in the interim, is he going to get the job? Like, that's where you need to say, exactly. But yeah, you are right.
The larger plan has to be sussed out, is what you're saying. And I tend to agree. It wasn't all gloom though. Tayshaun Buchanan, I believe his first pro game at BMO Field, which is a great moment for a Brampton kid, scores a header, which, I mean, he can do everything, but I didn't see that coming. He looked great. I think it was a cool moment for a lot of people at that stadium as well. I know they weren't necessarily cheering the goal, but it was really cool to see Tayshaun ball out like that at home before he goes. I wonder how close he is to going, David. It sounds sooner rather than later, right?
I think he will finish this season playing soccer in MLS. I've said that the whole time. Like, you're looking at an ownership group that wants to win MLS Cup, that has not a huge history of selling.
We're talking as a sale, but stick with the team for the rest of the year kind of thing before this window closes.
So probably sell, come back on loan, agree a deal maybe privately, and it's not announced until January, whatever it is. Just everything about the history of this club and Bruce Arena says that they want to try and win MLS Cup and the Sporting Shield, but mainly MLS. And that's what they're mainly focused on. And quite honestly, right, what is the difference for Tayshaun if you sell him now at his peak, or let's say maybe he has a bad run of form or even gets hurt, the number drops a couple million dollars. What does that mean to the Crafts? Like, in honestly, what do they care? So he'll play the rest of this season in Major League Soccer, which is cool because it's kind of like what we saw with Brendan Aaronson last year, what we've seen with Caden Clark, like a chance to like know that you're watching this talent up close and personal for that last time or that last stretch is a lot of times fun. And what's really cool about what he's done over the last 2 weeks to me is he stepped in for Carlos Heel and shown that he can not just be dangerous, but be the central force of an attack. And I think that elevates what you can sell him for. Gustavo Bo's also been phenomenal, but he has upped his game as talent has gotten injured around him, rather than, you know, oh, well, Carlos Heel's the focus, and so I'm able to find my gaps when it's one-on-one and when I'm playing off him. That's not the case anymore, and he still has, I think, 2 goals in 2 weeks.
the mics at BMO Field get a lot of what the coaches say. It's one of the cool features, but we heard a lot of Bruce Arena yelling at people on Saturday, and it was a great experience. They had to mute the feed several times because it was just a string of expletives, but it was very interesting to hear what he says, what he's saying, who he's saying it to. I don't know, I'm not going to call him a genius, but clearly one of the best to ever do it in MLS. Cool insight there. Another huge game this weekend, David, Sunday night. Which I don't know if you stayed up for this one in entirety on the East Coast. A bit of a tough mission, but if you did, you saw probably the goal of the year from Jimmy Madranda. Yes, that's right.
As we both predicted preseason, we said Puskás winner, Jimmy Madranda, coming into this season. Everyone knows that. Seattle's they're a monster. Literally, they beat Austin on the road with a bunch of teenagers and Tacoma Defiance players. Now they get healthy. They come into this one. And then off the bench, Jimmy Madranda scores one of the most absurd goals. So Freddy Montero scored one of the goals of the week. Then Rui Diaz follows that up with an absurd free kick that I don't think I've ever seen a free kick hit that way. Yeah. Like he hit it like someone rolled it across the goal to him, right? Where it's like the way he hits it with the outside of his foot and the way it just like goes straight up into the corner. No bend even off of it. And then Madranda followed up with that absurd volley.
Incredible goal. Man, I don't remember Freddy Montero being this good in Vancouver when I got to watch him live when I lived there. And it felt out like the end of something, but like perhaps he was about to leave and go on a bit of a journey. But to see him back now and playing extremely well for Seattle, is it the Seattle magic sauce? Like, is it just what happens now where even a wayward son can return and be an important player? Because they definitely need him with some of the injuries they've got.
So I agree with you, Devang. I look at it from this point of view, which is on the goal he scores, a ton of work for him to do by himself, right? He comes in field on his left foot. There's a bunch of Timbers defenders around him. But the play is created where João Paulo picks up the ball in transition. And you're going up the field and Roldan makes a run to the left. Rui Diaz pulls a defender to the right. And then Nico Lodero's coming underneath. And João Paulo carries it the whole way and then lays it off for Freddy Montero. Think about that talent and what Portland's dealing with in that moment. And then Vancouver the last 4 years.
Yeah, right? Close.
And so close. I'm just watching that moment play out. And it's like Roldan's making a great run. And Rui Diaz is the golden boot leader. And João Paulo's been an all-star. And Lodero's arguably one of the greatest players in league history. And the Timbers are trying to deal with all of that. And Montero just has to jog to the edge of the box and then picks up the ball and creates that goal, which is phenomenal. But like on Vancouver, it would have been him running from midfield with the ball. No one would be making those runs. Defenders wouldn't be scrambling and he would have to create that moment. And this is why I think Seattle has been successful. Kellen Rowe, Shane O'Neill, Freddy Montero, Will Bruin. These are guys who, yeah, they're better than we thought or they have more in them. But the spine of this team is what makes all that possible. Like you can go out and play well when you have a lockdown defense, you have Fry, you have João Paulo. Yeah, your job now is to attack one guy every once in a while and not like carry a team and do all these things. And so that's to me what allows Seattle to be this good is you have that superior talent. And for example, Columbus won MLS Cup last year and Josh Williams started at left center back. And I don't knock Josh Williams as a player, but his ability to do that is because Mensa, Room, Arthur, Nagby, and Zelarayan are so good that it's not that hard a role for him. And then you look at other teams that struggle. Let's take Toronto. It is right now for Omar. Like he has a lot to do. If you slotted him into the Revs or Seattle, he'd probably have a pretty good season.
That's exactly it. It's the way the cookie crumbles, especially for TFC right now. Yeah, go ahead.
I also feel bad knocking Vancouver because now we're getting word that Cavallini's out for 6 weeks. So they'll basically never see Cavallini and Gault together, which is rough. I think Brian White can do some of it. I think he's already proven he can do some of the things Cavallini does well, but Cavallini's ceiling is eight times what White's is. And so that sucks. Sorry, Vancouver.
Speaking of Vancouver and ton of MLS action continues this week, a bunch of midweek games as well, but the Canadian Championship is underway. Cavalry got that started with a win over Edmonton. There are a bunch more games coming this week, including a big one between Pacific and Whitecaps, which would be awesome. But I wanted to shout out Atletico Ottawa, their first home game at TD Place. 12,000 fans I believe it's their first home game since they joined the league 18 months ago. Obviously, some tough circumstances involved and some benevolent owners who took the guys over to Spain to train, but they finally arrived at home and won the game with a Brian Wright, late winner in the 87th minute. Cool scenes. I know there's some discourse about Ottawa's pay what you want system for this game and how much fans are willing to pay, and some surprising numbers, which I think we can get to a bit further on, maybe in the weeks to come, about Canadian soccer. But overall, it's nice to see them open up shop at home in Ottawa. Good for them. When we come back, of course, Bundesliga, La Liga, Premier League, all getting underway, plus League One. My God, a lot to get to coming up next on AFP.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to AFP. Well, if you like soccer, you were in for a treat this weekend. Turn on your TV, your streaming device, your computer, your phone, whatever it is you use to watch the game. Something was on at all times. It's a shame that Arsenal ruined my weekend. It's a shame that that happened on Friday, because usually for me, I like the early game because then you can really just watch carefree the rest of the games and get sunk into it and watch different leagues and different players, and it's really fun. But the taste left in my mouth from that game was so bitter, and it lingered and festered that it infused into every other game I watched. So as I'm watching freaking Brighton and Burnley, I'm asking, why is Burnley playing more effective soccer right now than Arsenal? And it made me sad. But I wanted to ask you guys, because you have a healthier outlook perhaps than I do right now, about what you watched this weekend, because I know there's a lot to get to, but what picked your interest, DG?
I kind of had a good rotation going between Premier League and Bundesliga, like the way the times worked out. You know, Saturday you had Premier League right. Start first, and then they kind of rotate in every 30-45 minute window, so you could watch that Bundesliga game at halftime, you switch to the Prem, and then you come back and finish up games. I obviously selfishly was excited to see Jesse Marsh's first game for Leipzig, and obviously Tyler Adams in the starting lineup, and it did not go well for them, which is frustrating for sure, I think. And like, you're not going to make a grand assumption off one game, but this is sort of what happened with Bob Bradley, was like, it didn't go well early after like a huge, like sort of a romantic, like, oh, this is exciting thing for not just Americans, I think, but for everyone, of like, because Jesse, like Bob Bradley, is super intelligent and interesting and has different takes on things and speaks their mind and is well thought, you know, thought out and all those things. And so you've seen him make the media rounds and all of this. And then this was a team last year that struggled to score goals. That's why they weren't able to push Bayern. And this was a team that lost 1-0 to Mainz group that had like half their roster with COVID and unavailable for this game. So that part sucked. But besides that, the Bundesliga was wild. You had like 3-4 goals in a ton of games. The Premier League was also wild. And I think you're looking at a ton of talent, maybe not as much time to work on things as these coaches would like because of the summer of soccer and all of that. And it feels like early on, instead of, oh, there's no cohesion in the attack, it's like these teams are ragged defensively. And so you're going to get to watch some entertaining stuff.
The fans being back is just such a massive positive, and it changes the scope of a lot of games. And to be fair, like Brighton Burnley with no fans, I don't know if I'm tuning into that. But if you add in some enraged partisans, it definitely adds to the atmosphere, and it makes your hair kind of stand up. So even, that was a welcome sight. Yeah.
Even the United Leeds game, which was entertaining, right? Ton of goals. I would have probably turned it off after it was like 4-2, was it? Or 3-1, whatever it was. I probably would have turned it off because I know the result at that time. I'll put something else on. But the atmosphere was electric, and you like wanted to watch Greenwood celebrate with the fans, and you wanted to watch Pogba like enjoy it. Like, it, as you said, it really does change so much of the environment. It was fun to watch.
Well, Nick, I think we can agree that the top four in England look very formidable, but
yep.
Liverpool coming in, probably the fourth dog, even though Spurs now might be top five. Oh, I want to die. Please shoot me. Please shoot me. Nick, seeing VVD though, back there. Yep. What a force. Yep. I mean, it's Norwich, and I know Norwich will be better this time around, and I love my man's Todd Cantwell, but VVD looked ready to go and fit. And I think even with some question marks about the rest of the team, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was back to full health, and that's a positive sign. And I mean, his passing was pinpoint. Like, mm-hmm. these long balls were going straight to the players. There was no question of where it was going. I was excited to see that. Apart from like the midfield, which was complete trash. I mean, you look at Salah. He looked like maybe he might have a kind of season he did his first season at Liverpool. He looks insane, and he looks aggressive, and he looks like he wants to do everything, not just poach goals. He wants to assist goals, whatever. So that's promising. I do think, like you said, they're the fourth team in that race. But I'm not gonna say that they could well challenge for the title if they have those pieces come together. But I wanted to mention too the PSG game I watched. And the unveiling with Messi. I don't know about you guys if you saw this, but it seemed very bizarre. The whole, like, I don't know, bringing out all the players that they signed, and, you know, Messi didn't play, obviously. I kept thinking in my head, like, PSG, like, who are their fans? But I guess it's the same kind of thing with, like, Man City, where there's not really a big fandom.
It's the same with every big team, Nick. Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah. Half of your Liverpool fans well. Either live your in the well, Lower East Side of Manhattan well, or they live in the Philippines. Get over yourself and you're like true club it's and true
outrageous,
fans.
Outrageous.
It's Paris, and also, France.
Also, the ultras for PSG are nothing to sniff at, Doc. I think you should watch yourself with these comments.
No, I'm just saying it was a bizarre way to unveil
I got you.
Them.
No, I got you. And yeah,
they,
I got you.
They,
and
they had to manufacture a moment because he wasn't playing. To like
right.
have him right. be presented, because you can't have a full stadium 3 days after you signed the greatest player of all time and not bring him out on the field and cheer for him and have the banners and all of that. So that was definitely awkward. I will say I was intrigued to tune into Barcelona, which was the only full La Liga game I watched, probably because of Messi, like to see what they were. And yeah, this isn't the biggest matchup in the world, and so we don't know everything yet, but like they were fun. They looked like a group that everyone kind of feels like they have a little bit more buy-in and responsibility. And so I'm actually excited to see what the next 6-7 months look like for this Barca side, because it could be one game they could fall apart and then no one's getting paid anymore and the club's in debt and it all falls apart and it's miserable. Or this could be like a scrappy sort of what Real Madrid was after Ronaldo left, and they had more talent, but Benzema elevated himself to arguably the best player in the league, second behind Messi, whatever. And they were able to build off the back line and the experience and then go from there. It'll be interesting to see if Barca does something similar.
So watching La Liga on TSN in Canada, a lot more exposure, I guess, if you're watching on regular cable or you have access to it in Canada. The ESPN production, I thought it did maybe a decent job as me speaking as a being a very charitable person and trying to explain why you should keep watching La Liga. Like, they were very adamant, like, listen, this league is still great and you should still watch it. And they were teeing up Real Madrid versus Alaves, and Real Madrid with your washed all-stars who are back starting up top, Madrid, Bale, Hazard, and Benzema, I'm like, this is very interesting to see how they'll adapt as well, because I guess they're the de facto favorite, even though Atletico Madrid has really done nothing to say that they aren't. But yeah. Real Madrid with a roster composed of like guys that we've all heard of, and then unheralded or not superstar products of their academy. Like it's a very interesting mix going forward with La Liga. Like I think with Messi leaving, it's arguably more interesting to tune in than it wasn't.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be a different race. Atleti have to be favorites, but at the same time, the level they operate at is tough to maintain. And two, I felt like they limped to the finish last year. And so while they won the title, if you take the last 6 months, they are not favorites coming into this season. And so that's where Real Madrid has that space. And there's like the classic names. Then there's the Militao, is Vinicius. Are these guys, Valverde, are they ready to step up? Because that to me is what's going to decide this for them. It's not, is there one more year left in Cruz and Modric and all of them? And I think all of them still have the same quality, and Casemiro will still be elite and Benzema will, but I think they'll need the help and support of that next generation. And are they, we thought they were a year away. I did at least for the last 2 years. So is this one finally the one where they are able to take over?
Bunch of North Americans in action, of course, as Canada and the US continue to ball out, producing exceptional players. Alphonso Davies looked very good for Bayern, but Bayern as a whole didn't look super great. Julian Nagelsmann suffers a draw in his first game with Bayern. Surprised, not surprised. I just
love the reaction to this was like, oh my God, it's all ended. Bayern are trash. Like, and that really was what it felt like.
100%. I mean, at any point to see Bayern squirm is worth it, just because I think of all the big clubs, and I understand why they don't get as much stick. They weren't involved in the Super League. I know. But the way they operate, I'm not super down with it either in terms of mining the rest of the league for talent. So anytime that a wrench can be thrown in their plans, I'm for it. But Fonzie was great as well, so I had the best of both worlds.
Although, was he slightly at fault on the goal and that he was trying? He was, okay, I'm not going to push that. He was trying to make something happen. I think that's his role in this team.
Right. We have incredible in the notes. We have incredible in the notes. I'll stick with it.
Okay,
we'll,
cool.
I will disregard visual evidence.
I'm fine with that. It was fun to watch. Upamecano will settle in, but I think he's already a top five center back in the world. Although I weirdly think Leipzig will be better this year, but that's because they've added Silva and they have potentially the next Ronaldo out on the wing. But I think Upamecano will be huge for this team. And then Kimmich being like hopefully permanently pushed back into central midfield, and with Nagelsmann's willingness to allow possession in that area, this team's still going to be really good.
I had a Christian Pulisic question basically on the fact that like Chelsea obviously is always going for it, and they've once again added a unicorn in Romelu Lukaku, but Pulisic's going to be a bit important guy for TT, it seems, right? And he scored against Palace, but like, what is the vibe for him this year, David? Like, is it playing a bunch more and just being that much more of an important player for a team that has very high ambition?
I think he's in that time period where if he can establish himself as a key piece to the team, that doesn't mean he's a starter every week, but he's a key part of this group. At that point, you'll be in 3 years where now I think he's staying. Right. And you look at players, I think, on other clubs, Tottenham, I think of like Lucas Moura and what he did. I don't know. There's a million other players like this, but you come in. There's a lot of excitement when you come in. For Pulisic, that first year was fantastic. The second year, well, now they've brought in other pieces because it's a big club. They will always bring in other pieces. And it felt like his spot was a little less assured. If he can be a key part of what they do successfully this year, even if he doesn't lock down one specific position as a starter, I think then you talk about a guy who's part of the fabric of a club, who's part of the successful group, part of the core, whatever it is. And so that's what I think the goal is for him. And so whether it is legitimately at wing back in competitive games, or if that was just a preseason thing, second forward, leading the line at times when guys are out, playing out wide when the formation changes, all those things, I think now puts him into a territory where like he is a key part of the group. And that's, as a US fan, that's all I want to see. Because he needs to get games to be at his top level. And I don't know that Chelsea is the right spot for him. But if he's getting out on the field consistently, you know he's going to score goals because he's done that his entire career.
I'm in an Arsenal fan group chat, and we've been talking about other teams who might be following this year, as of course Arsenal has a ton of less games to play because they're in no other competitions but only England because the team is quite poor. But we were talking about other teams to watch, and obviously it's not about cheering for another team, but it's about players. And if Haaland isn't like number one on the list, underlined several times, I don't know what you're doing, because I feel like we got Gio Reyna, we got the rest of Dortmund, we got Jude Bellingham, but how much Haaland could put on that price tag he's got will be the question this year, because I feel like it's only going to go extremely up.
You think he finishes the year at Dortmund?
I wonder. I wonder if the idea is, or maybe I'm just thinking that Raiola's just played this so expertly well that they know there'll be funds available for him next summer.
Yeah.
To not do the deal in like January, I guess, or do it now.
Yeah, the only thing about January is normally the numbers are inflated in January, but you also don't normally make that big of a signing.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's sort of like waiting for the dust to settle on Kane. And then you come into next summer and it's like, well, Benzema's a year older. Or is he the big Real Madrid move? I think that'll be Mbappe, but Mbappe, I think, will be on a free at that point. So maybe they can make the move for both and, you know, quote unquote, yeah, rehabilitate the club under those two names and whatever. And then you look at Kane, where if he doesn't go, then City's looking for that guy. If he does go, does Tottenham have the money to spend? Is Barcelona looking for that player? Whatever it is. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But I saw people pick Dortmund to win the league. Obviously, anytime you're not picking Bayern, it's a risk. But I'm of the mind of like, okay, well, who besides Bayern? And I didn't think Dortmund... The issue with Dortmund has always been the highs are high and the lows are too low to maintain a title run. But if he is that one step more mature and more consistent and is somewhat of a leader in this group, maybe they are good enough to push over the course of 8 months.
So much to follow, a lot to get to that we missed. But I will say, before we move on and get to Ask AFP to close this week, big shouts to the Spurs fans for Are You Watching Harry Kane? That was hilarious. I loved
love
it.
That. Yep, loved it.
And in the weird solidarity against the big money ghouls, even though I support a team that's part of it, I didn't mind sticking one in City and Pep's idea of football and his weird refusal to recognize sport washing when he talks about the money invested by the people involved in this club. I think he knows what's going on and he's a very smart guy and he plays dumb sometimes and I'm a bit sick of it. So
it would be wild Spurs, if he didn't, by the way. Imagine if you were the one
met
Pep Guardiola one time and you brought it up and
he didn't know, and
you were like, oh, well, no, it's an oil-rich country with terrible human rights background, and so they're using the club to have positive PR. And it, like, imagine you just see his eyes light up and be like, that's what's happening?
Dog, those turtlenecks necks don't knit themselves. He knows what they're doing. All right, that's Europe. When we come back, we close up shop with the mailbag, Ask AFP.
Welcome back, and I formally want to apologize to PSG fans for being on my high horse. I maybe have rubbed some people the wrong way, but I'll get through this after listening to David's impression of myself. I'm a little bit self-conscious, so here we go.
Jeez.
It's now time for everyone's favorite segment, Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send your own question, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Our first question goes to the Raving Times, and they ask, which league should young Canadians in the CPL be exported to? So I'll say, I guess he's trying to say, what's the best option for these CPL players?
$1 million question, maybe a bit less, $500,000 question, but a huge one in terms of decisions. I think for recency and someone we can maybe compare alternative paths to, Tristan Borges famously left Forge after an MVP season. I went to Belgium, he was in the second division, ended up not really fitting in with those plans. And I think he found it was in his best interest to come back to Hamilton and relink with Forge. And that's not to say that he could end up going back out to another European club. But I guess the question is, would Borges have been better served maybe making a move to MLS instead of Europe, DG? I am leaning that I don't think this is like a cookie cutter situation where one size fits all. Like, I think in Borges' case, Europe is something that he had his eye on and he already been with TFC, maybe had an idea of what MLS was like. But I think for a lot of these players, for me, I think MLS is the most likely destination, the best one if you want to end up in like a Joel Waterman situation where you are a squad player with a good outfit making decent money. Like, I think that is a dream to live by.
Yeah, so big picture, if your dream is to go to Europe, I think now MLS has shown that that could be a pathway, right? Because of the amount of young players they've sold to Europe. Now clubs are looking for the next Tejan Buchanan, they're looking for the next Brendan Aaronson, and Tejan Buchanan is that guy. When he moves on, who will be the next one? The issue and the reason the CPL is necessary is Canadian players don't count as domestic players for American-based MLS clubs. And so the advantage of a domestic player, even if the quality is less or it's less assured of a player, is normally, well, you'll have a limit to your international roster spots. And so you want to spend them on a Nico Lodero and a João Paulo. And so can I get Alex Roldan at right back? Because then I can use that spot on somewhere else. Unfortunately, for many CPL players that are Canadian, you're still limited to those three MLS clubs. Hence why they built the CPL, to have more options for those players. So I think that's clearly an option, even though it didn't work out. Borges going to Belgium was the right move. Belgium and Portugal are probably the two countries that you're looking at that are stepping stones. They are leagues that understand you're coming here, but you also have an idea that you want to move forward, and they'll help you do that. And they want that to happen for you because it's good for their clubs. And so those are the two countries that stand out. And the other area that would make sense is Scandinavia, because Scandinavia has always been a part of the soccer world that they are trying to find advantages to maintain competitive, you know, ability with the rest of Europe. And so we've seen Canadian and American players go there in the past. Many times it was straight out of college. It was like one of the few areas where they would scout and take you out of college because they knew that there was a level of quality to those players. It would make sense now that those same clubs in Sweden, in Norway, in Denmark, would look at it and say, well, now the same guys that we were getting at 21 or 22 out of college, now they're 20 or 21 and they've played pro soccer already. So it would make sense that there'd still be opportunity to go there. How much is a transfer are you going to get? Maybe not much, but you could get sell on to make it worthwhile down the road. So those would be the ones where it would hopefully be in the pathway for CPL as it grows.
Adriano asks, would it be better for an MLS-run women's league or a CPL-run women's league, or should they go on it, or should they go it on their own? I guess, should they do some sort of similar thing that they do in Europe where they have clubs that back their women's teams?
This is really interesting. One of the successes for Europe has been the infrastructure existing, right? So you've put together a Man City women's team, well, then you can start to use the facilities that the men's side has, which already gives you a step up in terms of being a fully professional setup and giving your players the best opportunity to be successful. MLS has those same facilities. I also, though, still think that the women's game can exist in a space different from MLS in terms of market. So North Carolina FC is a big example of they operate out of Raleigh, Cary, North Carolina, where they play. Maybe the market isn't considered big enough or historic enough for an MLS team, but you can buy in at NWSL at a lower level, but you can build a massive club with a ton of support, both locally and globally. Look at Naomi Osaka, you know, becoming a part of that ownership group, the jerseys they sell around the world. So I think it's a combination of both to me. Like, I think the Thorns and the Dash are a good example, and they are able to use those facilities and use the strength of the MLS side, but I also think you want strong independent clubs because that's how you're guiding your league. You don't only want ownership groups that have an eye on both. You want ownership groups that are fully focused on building the women's game. So if it's fair to say in the middle, I'm going to say in the middle.
It's a huge question. I think especially off of what the Canadian Canadians did in the women's competition at the Olympics and the gold medal, and how do we sustain this, and how do we build off that huge number that CBC got for viewership? And I think I saw one of the bigger questions is, maybe we do what we did with those MLS clubs in the early days where you had three teams maybe link up in the NWSL rather than have the CPL start their own women's league, or we have an independent women's league in Canada. And I think a lot of people who've been around these battles and fought these wars in Canadian soccer are rightly apprehensive, I think, of starting an independent women's league in Canada at this moment. And they outline some pretty rational reasons. Like, I have a hard time taking them down, because not only have they experienced them, but they present some facts to back them up. But I think for me, going forward in the short term, in terms of getting Canada a better footprint in the women's game, following that MLS model, but not righting some of the wrongs that you mentioned in that first question, would be a big mistake in terms of who can be represented on rosters and whether or not they count as domestic players. I think if Canada wants to get into the NWSL and have franchises here as well, maybe learning from those mistakes, frankly, that are still plaguing us today would be a huge positive.
And to your point, like, the reason you want to have a World Cup is because it requires the FAs and the money around the game to build training facilities, because that's what the foreign teams are going to need when they come to the World Cup, and to build infrastructure, which then can be used permanently for local players. And so that has to be used for both the women's game and the men's game. Like, this 2026 World Cup can't be just about building facilities so that the men's game can be pushed along. It has to be both. The Canadian women winning gold shows you the potential that exists. But it also has to just be, that's the way it should be. And so coming out of this, or over these next few years, I think that's where you talk about, you want a league that can go on its own, but you also don't want to, you don't want to sneeze at or walk away from the potential to use these facilities that are being built, to be able to use some of the money that's coming into CPL clubs, because the Canadian FA has to push its own league going into a World Cup, similar to how the US had to push MLS going into the 94 World Cup and all those things. So there has to be a way to use those resources. And part of that's going to be teaming with some of these teams or some of these leagues. But there has to be an in-between at some point where you still have something that can stand alone. And it's not just, if you're a Timbers fan, then you're a Thorns fan. And if you're a Timbers owner, then you're the Thorns owner, and you do it that way. It's worked for them, but I don't think it's going to work for every club.
Well said, as usual, DG. Good to be back, friends. Another AFP in the books. A reminder, if you're in Toronto or willing to travel, hopefully we still can travel in a couple of weeks, but tickets go on sale this Wednesday for Canada, Honduras, September 2nd, BMO Field. Be there. Nick and I will be there. So what are you doing? David, I guess you won't be able to cross just yet. You might, though. We could see.
You're like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'll probably be in
the United States. For you,
be safely watching at home. That's good.
Yeah.
But a lot more games where that came from. And then maybe we'll get to Nashville somehow. Plan ahead. All right. That's pie in the sky. That's dreaming big. But that's what we do on AFP. A reminder, we are on patreon.com/afootballpodcast. Join us today. Get the show ad free. Join the Discord. Get exclusive access to bonus episodes. It's a pretty good deal. We're also on twitter.com/afootballpod, where we're tweeting episode links and just general soccer stuff. A reminder, a rating or a review wherever you get this podcast would be wonderful for us in terms of getting the show into more people's ears. So yeah, that's the spiel. As always, a massive thanks to Dill, producer extraordinaire on the ones and twos. And for Nick, David, and myself, thank you for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you next week.